Please go ahead. This afternoon's conference call is now being recorded.
Thank you so much, Tim. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is the translation and transliteration of contact information, PDP, and we are on the 12th of March. And on the call, we have Jennifer Chan, Jim Galvin, Justine Chu, Peter Green, Peter Rintforth, Sarah Bocchi, and Wen Tsai, and Chris Dillon, the co-chair. For staff, we have Lars Hoffman, Julie Headland, Howard Lee, and myself, Glenda St. Jerry. May I remind you all, please, to state your name before speaking for the transcription. And thank you very much, Chris. That is over to you.
Thank you very much indeed. And let us move into point three on the agenda and just get that out of the way. So I need to ask you officially whether there have been any changes in statement of interest since we last met. Hearing nothing and seeing nothing, I think that means that we can safely proceed into agenda item number four. And no great surprise here. So last week we got to round about number 70 in the spreadsheet, and I'm just intending to continue from that point on. But before I do, we have now in the chat room, in Adobe Connect, we have version 6 of the review tool. Now, there were some relatively small amendments suggested by PETA, I think. Lars, are those amendments included in this version?
Sorry, Chris. Could you repeat the question? I didn't quite hear.
So this is version 6, but I think PETA sent some edits by email, and I'm just wondering whether the edits are in this version. Whether you
no, I don't believe they are.
Okay. Well, the main thing is just that we know they're not in there, but it is up to date apart from those.
Can I just quickly ask, because I can't see them in my inbox. PETA, did you send them to the list?
PETA, yeah. Yes, I did.
Oh, here
I
they
got
are.
some comment back, so I can't actually read it here. It was more of a clarification, correction.
I've got it now, PETA. On point 68, is that what you're talking? That's the comment you made?
Yeah, I think so.
I'll put it in.
Scroll it down. Yeah. Okay.
I will upload the amendments in just 1 minute. If you just want to proceed, Chris, and I'll upload the new document and it'll.
Well, I mean, it's a small amendment. I was just making sure. That amendment didn't get lost, so I think it's probably okay just to put it in version 7, which will come out after this call. I'm just making sure we knew whether it was there or whether it wasn't. my goodness, linguists get very bogged down in these detailed things. Okay. This document is very nearly completely up to date, and I'm intending basically to start at round about number 70. But just I'd like to ask whether anybody wanted to pick up anything from what we've already done before I do that. All right. In fact, I have noticed that quite a few of the things we'll be talking about today have already come up. So, to some extent, we will be referring back anyway. Also should say apologize to the people who are having technical problems. It sounds as if Adobe Connect is not behaving very well today, but let's just hope it settles down a bit. Now, Last week, as we were saying, we got round about number 70, and number 70 is very long and quite complicated, so I said let's start with it rather than struggle through it at the end of a meeting. And in fact, it's not quite as complex a comment as it first looks. So there are really themes that come through these. So really what the IPC is saying basically internationally readable who is would benefit the following purposes, and then you've got a whole list of purposes, and it is a long list. But the interesting thing is that there really are common things here. A lot of these purposes could be addressed as long as the data were machine readable. So it's not the case that the only way of addressing these concerns is to transform the data. Many of them would be addressed if the data were machine readable. And I think we have fairly general agreement that we really do not want data in picture form or other non-machine readable formats. And, of course, as soon as you're in a situation where you can highlight data, you can use it to search and for various other functions. So that actually addresses quite a few of these points, but perhaps not all of them. So I will just double-check that that is the case more slowly, but I think that may save us a little bit of time. Petter, would you like to ask a question about this?
No, Petter here. No, just to clarify, what we wanted to show was a number of situations where it was important to get a quick and easy way to search for the contact information without having the need to go to any local attorneys or local transcripts to get that. So it's more of a number of examples on that. And of course, I mean, if we can find, we'll be glad if we can find any possible way to do that. But we want to show the need for an easy way to do it, and also point it out from different kinds of internet users. Thanks.
Indeed. Thank you very much for that clarification. I'll just whip through the list and just double check that what we've just been saying covers all of these different points. So enable due diligence searches. Yes, I think so. Enable one to determine all domain names registered by a specific entity. Yes. Domain names registered to a recently merged company or an internal search. Yes, I think so. Enable brand owners to contact registrant. Yes, I think so. Infringement. It's about infringement. Facilitate identification of and respond to fraudulent use of legitimate data by reverse query. I think that's all right. Enable IP owners to conduct historical research. Again, I'm fairly sure that's all right. Now, the one which doesn't quite fall under this... sorry, Emma, we're at number 70. Now, the one that perhaps doesn't fall under what we've been saying is the last one, so I'll just perhaps read that more slowly. Enable individual internet users, including consumers, to confirm that any given website connected to a specific domain name is held by a real company and not a fictitious one that masks its identity by using a unique script or language. Is okay. I think that is a sort of a slight issue. It is something we have already spoken about, and certainly the comment I've already made when this issue has come up before is that at the moment, this doesn't really, I think this isn't really an issue. It hasn't really happened, but certainly conceivably it could happen. So I don't know what the likelihood of this happening is, but perhaps we need to flag it up in the comments as a logical possibility. But I am fairly sure that we have already dealt with this, but just in case we haven't, that would be the line that we would want to take. All right. Amr, would you like to pick up anything?
Thanks, Chris. Amr, I have a question about that last bullet, and I'd appreciate help on it. I'm not sure I see how transformation or actually the who is in general, I'm not sure how it enables an individual internet user from confirming the authenticity of a website's owner or who is behind it. If someone who is misrepresenting himself, herself, or if an organization is misrepresenting itself in the who is, how could an individual identify this? An individual will probably come up against a name and contact information in the who is, which may correspond to the contact information available on the website itself. So I'm just a little unclear on how transformation of this data would help with the internet user's confidence in the authenticity of the data or the representation of the owner of the website. So if Peter could help me out with this, I'd appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Yes, I think that's certainly a very that's a very good question. Perhaps if Petter, would you like to address that?
Yeah, Petter here. I'll just give you a quick practical example that we got questions from clients quite often. You're sitting there in your office during summertime where everybody is away, and you're dealing in a company, let's say a restaurant company, and you got an email connected to your website stating that you need to do this and this, otherwise you will not have any possibility to use your bank account or your trademark is going to fail, and you need to pay this and that. And there's a link to a website, and it looks very significant and real. You can also, if you do a quick search and see, does this seem to be the real holder, the real legal website communicator, and then you can see that easily that the domain name is obviously registered by someone that you can identify has nothing to do with that company. So that's just one very common example when, let's say, a normal customer needs to have the possibility to identify the holder in an easy way without having to. Well, I have nothing against getting legal work from that, but I mean, it happens often. So also the normal customer needs to have an easy way to identify. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I think effectively what this is saying is the sort of at the moment the language which is most likely to be a sort of lingua franca is English. So as I guess it is more likely at present that English would be useful in that case. I mean, increasingly as the internet expands, that may become less so. But thank you. That certainly adds some elements to that. Now there are things going on in the chat room. So I'll pick those up, and then I can see Emma's got his hand up. So how would the user be able to determine that the registered name holder has anything to do with the company? Oh, yeah, okay, that's actually the point that Petta was just raising. And Justine confirms that it's an issue. It's a question of how the registrar handles a registration application process, yes. Amr, would you like to develop that?
Yeah, thanks, Chris. In response to Petra, I do appreciate that that these sorts of problems are fairly common in cyberspace, and the issue of the fraudulent representation of the companies or services is certainly significant. I'm not debating that at all. I'm just wondering how someone who is trying to answer this question, someone who gets an email like the one Petter just described and does a lookup in the Whois to find out who the domain name holder of the domain name that the user was directed to is, and the person finds a name and an address, contact numbers, and so forth. How would the user actually determine whether this domain name holder is associated with the company or the service or not? And I guess that would also apply to whether transforming the data would be helpful or not as well. I'm just trying to figure it out, and I'm not seeing it, so any help would be appreciated. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. I think that Jim is typing something in the chat room which may be relevant. And in the coming new TLDs, it might also depend on the requirements of the registration policies, and actually that is a slightly separate issue. Okay. The way I read it, the way I understood that, was that just if the data were in a language that, it's not so much in English, it's more if the data are in a language that one understands, one can often see who, you know, what's going on, whether there's likely to be a connection. If the data are impenetrable, if they're in a language we do not understand, then we really have no way of knowing what's going on. That's why I was saying what I was just a moment ago. All right. Now, in the chat room, there are other things going on. So we've got Justine saying, what about privacy services by registrars? Sometimes Whois won't even tell you who owns a domain. Ah, yes. And there does seem to be stipulations that would indicate that, if anything, that may be more of an issue going into the future, if I have understood that correctly. Okay, and then Amar is picking up the point, aren't we discussing identity validation, which is actually not done in the current Whois setup? Yes, I think that's a fair criticism. We are wandering off into that area, but it does, it does affect us to some extent because, we are dealing with whether transformation should happen or not. So that's really why we're considering it. Jim is saying, even if Whois won't tell you precisely who owns it, it should in principle give you a point of contact. Okay. Now, before going on into more of the, or perhaps no, I'll do the comments and I'll come to Emma. I think that's probably the best approach. You know your pure bank ID, and if you see that the domain name is registered by a physical person in another country, you can avoid problems by the identification. Yeah, that's an interesting example. And Justine is then saying, correct, so if the registration data are invalid, then how does transformation correct that? If the data are false, they're false. It may just be more obvious that they're false if they're in a language that you understand. Amar, would you like to add to this?
Yeah, thanks, Chris. This is Armour again. And I just did want to point out that identity validation is not a current practice in terms of registration of domain names. If you look at the findings of the privacy and proxy abuse study that was done last year, there was also part of the study was also did involve looking at people who register domain names who don't use privacy proxy services, and just to check to see how whether or not the domain name holder is actually who he, she, or it says they are. But I think the study did show that there are a number of people registered in the Whois who aren't actually who they say they are. So we have a lot of bad actors who do use privacy and proxy services to mask their identities, but you also have a large number of bad actors who don't use it, but just misrepresent who they are in the Whois. And this may support Petter's argument here, because then you would say, well, if they're misrepresenting who they are and the Whois, then you could discover this by looking it up. But my question really is, how would you make that determination when you do a Whois lookup and you find some random person's name being listed as a domain name holder and random contact information? If this is indeed a bad actor pretending to be, let's say, for example, the technical contact for HSBC in the Whois database, then how would you be able to determine what if you call this person or email this person, the person would simply respond saying, yes, I am with HSBC, even though he or she isn't. So that's really what I'm trying to wrap my head around. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Yes, I guess when I was speaking earlier, I was presuming that, if you're looking for somebody in HSBC, one is presuming that there'll be an address or something that will link it, but I guess there probably are situations where, where there is no sort of clue like that, so that puts us in a bit of a tight corner. There are a few things going on in the chat room, so I'm just going to pick those up. Rudy's had horrible difficulty dialing in. Petter is saying, correct, as a customer, do you only use the safe and 100% correct information? And Jim is saying, replying to Justine, precisely, transformation should be about display, nothing more, nothing less. That's what makes dealing with some of the issues put forth by IPC and others difficult to address in this working group. Okay, thank you. And Justine is agreeing with Jim, as is Amar. All right. I think we are about to be able to go a bit further down the spreadsheet, but before we do, I'll just check Amar's comments. Apologies for moving us into this direction, probably unnecessary for the purpose of this PDP. It's associated with the IPC comment there. Yes, that's true. And as I was saying earlier, I think there are quite a few things that we have to be aware of on the edges of what we're doing, because as I was saying last week, there is a concern that we could recommend impossible solutions, which would be a seriously bad thing to do. All right, let us move to number 72. Now, yes, where to begin with this? IPC appreciates that concerns about mandatory transformation are related to costs. Well, no, they really aren't, because it's not just the costs. There is this whole feasibility, the fact that we don't have standards, that it's very important to do it accurately. That could be very expensive. Well, okay, sorry, that is cost, but it is the whole sort of feasibility, the lack of standards. So, you know, I really would stress it isn't just cost. Or, you know, there is a link, because generally if you try and do something really hard or impossible even, then, you know, the prices do tend to rise. So it's not that the prices aren't relevant, but there are other, you know, there are other serious concerns there. But they believe that there are ways to provide solutions without increasing costs for registrants and or end users. Okay, these ideas are that, now let me think, either it's done automatically, at which point it may end up for some languages being transliteration, but that, you know, there are situations where that doesn't work very well. Or it's done by volunteers, and we know that if this kind of work is done by volunteers, the quality is going to drop hugely. So I find this comment quite exasperating, to tell the truth. Would anybody else like to pick it up? Okay, right, so, yes, Amma in the chat room is also mentioning the fact that burden isn't just cost, it's liability. So I was talking about feasibility, but liability is also a crucial part of this matrix. So yes, that is a good addition to be made there. But what I am very keen to do is to dispel the idea is that there are free tools and that we will get a quality or there would be a quality product if volunteers in all sorts of different places did it. So the automatic tools don't work, and if you do it by volunteers, your quality will be so poor that it may not be useful for anything very much. So that's really the summary of my rant. Okay, and I'm not aware of, and then Amma is saying, I'm not aware of any solutions that exist. Well, to be fair to them, I think they may be referring to the in inverted commas solutions I've just mentioned. So this is the automatic solutions, which, you know, the feasibility study said more or less what I've just said to you, and, you know, this idea that somehow we can get volunteers doing it all over the place and somehow keep them consistent. I think it's just it's a real non-starter. Before going to Jim, I'll just finish because the chat room's quite busy. Amma is saying, not saying that they aren't out there. Yeah, there are some. Okay, but recent studies indicate what Chris is saying, that the solutions available in the market that meet the needs of accuracy transformation. Available that meet the axis of accuracy and transformation. I think there's something. Yeah, I mean,
Chris,
the other thing
also,
is,
yeah, they don't meet the needs.
Ah, don't. Yes. I thought there was a. Thank you very much, Emma. I thought there was a missing negative. Yeah, that brings it together. I mean, very long term, conceivably, you know, this could change, but. It's going to change no time soon. I think that would be the best way I could articulate that. Jim, would you like to come in and add something?
Yeah, excuse me, Jim Galvin. Just to comment directly on item 73 here, right,
mm-hmm.
About the gaps coordinating standardized conversions. I don't recall that we've talked a great deal about this, so it might actually be something that's a little bit out of scope for us.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be interesting, I'm wondering if it's, you know, really within scope for us to suggest something like this for future work. But long term, you know, there are really significant benefits to having standardized translation mechanisms to and from languages, which is something that, you know, GAC representatives could coordinate for their respective countries and such. And I'm wondering if that would be something that we could mention as future work or something to, you know, keep aware of for the future. I defer to our chairs as to whether or not, I mean, how far we would go down such a path in suggesting such things. Thanks.
Thank you, Jim. Yes, that is, as with everything in this PDP, nothing is black or white, and that is a very, very solid suggestion. So, as I was saying before, the key thing here is that transformation is of high quality. One way of doing that is to get it done by as few actors as possible. So if the GAC were able to coordinate that and they were to say, in the case of Thailand, then transformation should be transliteration, and it should be done along these lines, that sort of approach would work. Now, it may be expensive, but that is in the realms of possibility. Whereas, the woollier suggestions that have been round earlier are really quite frightening. So yes, I mean, if actors were to want to transform, then that sort of approach would be most likely to produce a sort of quality product. So yes, I think that's effectively that's the other side of it. So if it were to happen, what would be the best approach? And it would be pretty close to that. And then, straight away out of this, we come, are we transforming all of the data or are we just doing it ad hoc? I mean, obviously, if we do it ad hoc, that gets easier. Now, before going to Amr, I'll just pick up a few things which Pittinan is saying in the chat room. And she's saying the Thai GAC quite agree with this approach. Yes, I think there was a very good paper which brought up things like this some time ago. For the Thai address system, transform meaning mix of transliteration and translation. So I mean, in some ways it's easier to specify a pure system. You sort of say it's basically transliteration, and then perhaps you might add a few exceptions. Okay. I'm dealing with a small thing. Oh, whoops. Sorry, I'm just having slight technical problems. Okay. So, So back to Pittinam's thing. It's easier if you have a pure system. So, basically you're transliterating. You could have a few exceptions. Now, one thing that's interesting, because obviously the expert working group on internationalized registration data have just published their draft final report, and one of the things in there that you might find interesting is that on pages 11 and 43, they have examples where they've actually used a sort of a mixed model of transformation, and it's neither transliteration or transformation, and they haven't really explained that. So when we come in the near future to look at that document, then this is something that we will need to spend longer thinking about. Coming back to the chat room just before we go to Amma, Petter is saying hopefully there will be a way to get official national accepted translation. I think that's more difficult. I think it may more be transliteration, and may also cut the cost of for the users. Yes, as that point was made in the Thai paper as well, that if it's done centrally, it will be cheaper than If the costs are actually all brought together, which of course if they're scattered they may not be, they may just be lost effectively. So you could get a system which is apparently cheap but actually is far more expensive just because people are not declaring costs. Okay, and then we're back in the chat room. Justine saying, mandatory but encouraged through changes in policy, in processes and policies. Yes, I mean, this is leading us on to other things, bigger things, really, about whether the whole thing should be mandatory or non-mandatory. I think in some ways the arguments, I think it's true to say the arguments I'm talking about now really occur in the case of transformation, whether it's mandatory or not. Even if you think that it really shouldn't be mandatory, you still have to be able to say, well, okay, if it were necessary, what would you do? That's really the way I am thinking of these arguments. Amma, sorry for keeping you waiting.
No, not at all, Chris. Thanks. This is Amma. I just wanted to go back to what Jim was saying and what you said, Chris, and Justine also mentioned this in the chat. I see. I certainly have no objection to having standardized translation mechanisms. I'm sure this would be helpful, but it's not necessarily helpful to address this with the GAC in mind when trying to answer the questions for this PDP. Like Justine says, yes, I think it would be helpful, but I don't think it should be a reason why we would say that it is desirable that this policy be mandatory. If a GAC member wishes to assist in developing linguistic standards for translation and transliteration, that would be great. And maybe WHOIS lookup users could use those or could be directed to them somehow when attempting to transform contact information. But I still don't see that as grounds for mandatory transformation in any way, and I certainly don't think that we should suggest that this policy be mandatory and just sort of drop the burden on the GAC's shoulders and saying, okay, every one of you GAC members is now required to somehow do this. And I don't think we actually have, I don't think the GNSO or ICANN has this authority at all. ICANN has the authority to enforce compliance standards in its contractual agreements with the contracted parties, the registers and registrars, but certainly not the GAC. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Yes, I don't think we'd be very popular if we were to suggest such a thing. However, generally speaking, the idea, if it were to be mandatory, the idea that the sort of centrally coordinated approach, whoever those people are, would be more likely to be cheaper and to produce a higher quality product. I think that is true. Okay, and Amma is saying popular, probably not, but we can't do that way even if we wanted to. Okay. Then Lars is saying that the working group could recommend that the GAC look into this and suggest that the WHOIS would benefit from GAC action, but the working group, GNSO, would certainly not compel the GAC. Yes, I think my impression is that the GAC might get a bit of a surprise if we were to suggest it, but probably need to ask for more advice before launching that one. Jim, would you like to raise something?
Yes, thank you, Jim Galvin. We probably don't want to spend too much more time on this, but I wanted to just kind of reshape the comment that I was making before and build a little bit here. I think we're all generally in agreement, and I guess if we're going to add some words in a final report about this, we'll spend a little bit of time wordsmithing this a bit so that we are certain we're all in agreement. I think that it would be fair to observe that mandatory translation, you know, would benefit from standardized translation and transliteration mechanisms. Separate from that, you know, we could also observe that if there were standardized translation and or transliteration mechanisms, then automatic mechanisms for translation and transliteration would have higher probability of success and quality, and in fact would probably you know, moot this requirement for translation and transliteration occurring in real time. It could be something that could happen later. I think it's useful to make those observations and to point out that appropriate authorities, perhaps governments, are the most likely place, because I do agree that, you know, maybe we don't want to identify who would do this or who wouldn't. So maybe we simply suggest it's something for the ICANN community to consider and look at and look around. But it is a worthwhile long-term strategy, especially in response to the study that's been done about translation and transliteration tools, you know, to further corroborate their advice and recognize in the context of what we're doing that, yeah, you know, there's some value here. It would help to mitigate many of the concerns that we have that are causing us to have to answer the questions we're answering in this working group. So I was a little bit long-winded, I'm sorry, but I am thinking that we're generally in agreement. Let's see if we can find a way to say something about this in our final report, just to sort of put this in context and put out there this suggestion that this might be a considered work item of the community at large, perhaps. Thanks.
Indeed. That sounds like a good way to go. I'm aware that I am possibly more skeptical about the tools than a lot of people, but you know, it is really just based on the experience I have of looking at various tools for various languages. All right. Quite a lot going on in the chat room. Okay. So Justine was saying, not mandatory but encouraged. I'm almost more wanting to say that I'm talking about transformation, and the policy thing is really something else. You know, what I'm looking at is how do you get transformation to work well, as well as possible, at a low price. Okay, and then Amr is saying to Lars, we could recommend this, but I would urge the recommendation that that would be irresponsible. We haven't looked into the GAC's ability to do this accurately. A dedicated PDP charter to look into this with the GAC may be needed to make that recommendation, way beyond the scope of this PDP anyway. Yes, one is aware that there is a leap between where we are and what the GAC could possibly do. And then Amok says, do not encourage this being included. Okay. Jim, would you like to add something to this? I think your hand
I just
was...
typed in the chat room. Sorry.
Okay. Oh, you have indeed. Yes, sorry. I'm not hot for this, but on the other hand, I believe there is value in groups acknowledging the work of others and the value it might have had for them. This is important for raising awareness and priorities. Indeed, yes. And Pitinan comes in. Sorry, the mic isn't working well today. Okay, yeah. And then there's another piece. About the GAC versus mandatory, I agree with Jim saying that it's not the ground to make it mandatory. I think these are two separate things. The standardization would be a benefit, yes, but that's not the reason for making it mandatory. Yes, that's exactly how I see it. Thank you very much. And then she comes in again with, just want to clear about the standardization, at least from Thai address. We can't make the standardization for translation or standardization for transliteration, but we need the standardization of transformation, which is mapping, directly mapping. Yes, I mean, to be fair to the examples given on page 11 and 43 of the draft report, they're pretty nice. They're nice transformations, but really, the amount of work necessary to create them is quite large. And they certainly do map to each other. There are then issues about, you know, whether you could get from one to the other and back again, and not to anything else by accident. So all of those issues are very interesting. I thoroughly recommend that report, by the way. You will find it interesting. Amar, would you like to pick up something at this point?
Yeah, thanks, Chris. So just to clarify my objection to all of this, I think that, well, DAC representation is very limited in terms of what an entire government actually does in any given country. DAC representatives are normally limited to specific branches within the executive branches of their governments with very limited scope. For example, there are several DAC representatives who are from the telecom regulators of their given countries, and if you ask them for expert insight on issues, for example, like healthcare or agriculture, they wouldn't necessarily be very helpful in answering those questions. I'd say that it would be the same for linguistics. So my objection to this is that before a recommendation like this is made, I think a great deal of coordination and dialogue needs to take place between the GNSO and the GAC before we even touch upon this. I mean, a recommendation like this could be done after extensive dialogue takes place, and that would only help determine what the scope of a policy process may be in the future. But to recommend this now, having done no work in this area at all, I think would be extremely irresponsible and possibly lead us into a direction we have no. Where we would have no idea where we're actually going. Thanks.
Thank you, Alma. I think it's too early to recommend it as a course. It's an interesting idea, but I think you're right. I think it's way too early. The interesting side of it is that, for example, if the recommendation would be that mandatory transformation happened, then we would, very, very soon it would be necessary to look at ways whereby that could happen, and at that point it would then kick off all of that. But yes, I mean, it does feel like a huge amount of work. All right. And Peto is saying, can we at least agree that it would be interesting to hear the GAC's views? Yes, I mean, I think we'd have to be quite careful, basically because of the sorts of things Amma was just saying, that we, at this stage, it probably best done informally, I think. All right, we've spent rather a long time on that, and I think we should move a bit further down. We are very close to the end now. One last comment, though. Petter, the GAC's view on any topic, the GAC's views are always welcome. My objections in phrasing this. Yes. Yeah, okay. All right, so... Number 74, I actually reckon we've dealt with this before, because it's who is information to be in the language of the registrar. We've really spoken about this, possibly supported by the registrar. Mandatory transformation if it is not in Latin characters or one of the six UN languages. And we have already spoken about this. So I would like to suggest that we go on to number 75, but there's a little bit of stuff happening in the chat room, so I'll pick that up first. So Amar is saying discussion should be taking place elsewhere, not here. Yeah, and Petter saying maybe there is a group within the GAC that can give us informal comments. That would be really interesting, and that could be some interesting to work to do in Buenos Aires, perhaps. And Amar is reminding us that we should stick to desirability rather than these more peripheral things. And Pitinan is offering to coordinate, which I'm sure will be gratefully received. Okay, wanting to make as much progress as we can. So going into 75. Ooh, I've been forgetting to scroll. This is very bad. Just a moment. Going into 75. Other options based on the expert working group is to require the script used for and that registration data to be either that of the TLD or else US ASCII. This approach would reduce, though not eliminate, the need for translation or transformation, which is, again, I would like to say that we've dealt with very similar items to this. So I think this is not very new. Okay. And then into number 76, the IPC. Jim, would you like to add something about one of those points?
Yes, sorry, Jim Galvin. So item 75, I do want to point out that the IRD, Internationalized Registration Data, initial draft of its final report does speak to this issue, and would encourage us to take a look there, just see the argument that we made there. I mean, we actually don't recommend these particular choices, and there's some discussion and argument about the choice that we do make, which is that the registrar, should use whatever it is that they are most skilled at. Thanks.
Ah, yes. Thank you. Yes, there are various principles in that report, and one of the principles backs that up, and I can't even remember which one it is, but as we read the report, that will be very obvious. Peter Green is applauding Pitinan's suggestion. Amar is saying that the PDP can't even recommend who performs the transformation. Yeah, it's a long way from our central work, and actual solutions is a step further. Okay, another huge discussion we haven't had. All right, so coming back to number 76, the IPC points out that this is very similar to 77. IPC points out that the initial report makes no reference to the fact that current ICANN stance that registries and registrars are encouraged to use only US ASCII encoding character repertoire for who is port 43. And also, ICANN issued an advisory stating that WHOIS must be an ASCII in 2014. We are aware of these things. Again, we are talking more about the system to come than what exists at the moment. So, we are very aware of this, but our discussions are really about the replacement system. I think that is something that we've already, I feel it's come up before, but just in case it hasn't. And coming back to the chat room, yes, Peter is saying he partially agrees with Amr. And Amma then came back and said, yes, needs a dedicated effort and discussion. The decision shouldn't be based on ours. Indeed, yes. Okay. Then on to number 77. ICANN issued an advisory stating that HUES must be an we've already done that. In fact, we get down a very long way this time because the next one we need to pick up is number 83. And this is Dot Shabaka saying aims to bring to end. They aim to bring an end-to-end Arabic experience to the domain name space. Thus, it would be very disappointing if HUES remains the only component of the domain name registration process that continues to requiring a knowledge of English. I wrote one letter in response to that. I wrote why. Yes. All right. Now, I realise we are very, very near the end of today's meeting, but there are just a couple of things I would like to mention, and that is that we will definitely finish this document. It's taken a lot longer than I expected it would, but we'll definitely finish next week. Then we will move into having a look at the draft final report from the Expert Working Group on Internationalized Registration Data. Now, as regards meetings, we have a scheduled meeting next week. I have no trouble with that, but unfortunately the following week, which is the 26th, I am traveling. We'll need to think about whether or how we, whether we can run that meeting. I can see Rudy's typing in the chat room, so I'll just wait a moment. And Rudy is saying that he's available, so it sounds as if we may be able to. Okay. Well, it would be very good if that were possible because, as I mentioned earlier, it has taken us longer to address these comments than I thought it would. So, it would be very good if that were possible. It's also conceivable that I might be able to attend the meeting, but I think it's very unlikely I'd be able to give it. And then the other thing here is, Amma, have you something you'd like to bring up?
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Summer. Regarding number 83, are we discussing this now or next?
No. Yes, I brought it up. So yes, if you'd like to bring up something about that, let us do that. That sounds really good.
I just wanted to say that I certainly sympathize with Dr. Shabaka's point here. I don't think that this is something that is unique to that registry per se. I recall just a few days ago at the Middle East DNS Forum, the chief administrator of the Kuwaiti CCTLD mentioned that they received several requests to that effect from their local registrants, and this is concerning a country code top level domain, not a generic top level domain, but I can certainly see how it would also apply for internationalized domain names that are of the generic sort, not the country code sort. However, having said that, having an end-to-end service in a local language script may not necessarily conflict with a policy recommendation of mandatory transformation, because then this burden could be shifted from a technical or linguistic perspective to the registrar or registry, but the cost implications will certainly affect the registrant, and I don't think that is necessarily fair to those registrants. So I just want to say that I do sympathize with Dr. Chalaka's statement here and also support an end-to-end solution for any provider in any script or language they choose to provide. Thanks.
Thank you very much indeed for that, Anna. That's a really nice place to to end in a sense, because it's very, very good to be aware of opinions like that are likely to be existing not just there but in many places. All right. Well, in that case, I would like to thank you all for another very good meeting. As I said earlier, let us get to the end of this at last next week and move into the draft final report. So very much looking forward to that. And as I say, thank you again. Goodbye then.
Bye-bye.